So this is kind of how I approach it. And I'll provide objectives for the appellant in your brief, but also what the responsive argument would be for the state, which is our appellee, which is what I am generally. All right. So when you have your specific objection in the trial court, the argument you raise on appeal has to comport with that same objection, meaning the argument has to mirror what happened in the trial court. If it does not, it's a longstanding principle that error will not be preserved. So when you as appellant are strolling through the brief, reading, not the brief, the record from the trial court, you need to be looking for those timely specific objections, figure out what is the true legal argument that that underlies that objection. And that is the argument you are stuck with raising on appeal. As Joanna said, I've been doing appellate work for a really long time, and I still regularly invoke this principle that the argument on appeal does not comport with the objection at trial and find error not preserved. So it's a real issue and one that the appellant really needs to be looking for. In that same context, you need to find a single ground. So maybe there were two or more arguments that were underlying the objection at trial, but you can only really raise one at a time. So what's going to happen if you raise multiple legal issues and various fact patterns all in one single point of error? That's called a multifarious brief. And the court has said you raise a multifarious brief that's inadequately briefed and nothing is preserved for appeal. It's in Rule 38.1 of the Rules of Appellate Procedure, which require a clear and concise argument. So I also use this multifarious argument regularly in my briefs because we routinely see points of error where legal issues have been conflated and presented all at once in one point. You will see the appellate courts refer to this principle that it's a multifarious brief, but generally the court will go on and address the merits in the interest of justice. But I don't think you want to be that lawyer that had the multifarious point of error. All right. The third thing is that a general objection in the trial court is not going to preserve error. And so you as appellant need to look at the record. And if you're stuck with a general objection at trial, look at the record and see if it's apparent from the context what the argument was. Did the trial judge understand what your objection was? The reason we require specific objections is so the trial court is aware of what the defendant thinks they're entitled to, why they think they're entitled to, what they want. So see if you can tell from the record the basis of the objection, even if maybe you have a general objection, such as I recently had a case, the objection in the trial court was, that's improper, Your Honor. That's not going to preserve error. That wasn't sufficient. And finally, Rule 38.1 of the Rules of Appellate Procedure requires you to cite to the record. And when I'm reading an appellant's brief and I'm going through and I see they say the trial court erred or overruled my objection and there's no citation to the record, that is a huge red flag for me. That makes me think maybe that didn't really happen in the trial court. Maybe it's really not been preserved. And so make sure, appellant, when you are presenting your issues, that you cite to the record, but that will also help you make sure you have a true specific objection and are raising only the single one. Having said all that about preservation of error and that it is a gateway, I want to jump to jury charge error. It is the one area where you can raise unassigned error, error that was not preserved in the trial court. Article 3619 of the Code of Criminal Procedure is our standard of review for jury charge error on appeal. About 35 years ago, David talked about this in his jury charge presentation, but the Court of Criminal Appeals interpreted this statute in the Almanza case, and they came up with our standard of review. I think standard of review for jury charge error is basically backwards. Normally, we see if an error is preserved, and then we address the merits. In jury charge error, you do it the other way around. Do we have error in the charge? And if we do, then we look to see was that error preserved in the trial court. And preservation of error is really significant in jury charge error. So from Almanza and Article 3619, because of an oddly placed comma in that statute, we came up with two standards of review. We have ordinary reversible error, which only requires an appellant to show some harm. And we have fundamental error, which requires an appellant to show egregious harm. The two standards both require that an appellant show actual harm in the trial court based on the jury charge given, the state of the evidence, the party's arguments, and anything else that might be relevant in the case, even including voir dire. But the egregious harm standard, the court has described it as a high and difficult standard. So you want to avoid that. And how do you avoid the egregious harm standard? You preserve error in the trial court. I saw a comment at the bottom of David's presentation, and someone wrote, "Defense counsel, please object," with an exclamation point. And they're right, because it makes such a difference on appeal on the standard of review that the court will apply to your issue. So the regular typical rules of preservation of error do apply to jury charge issues. And I say sort of for this reason.